The Venturi's Voice podcast brings together some of technology's brightest minds to discuss all things leadership, technology, and staffing. Keep the conversation going in the Venturi's Voice Slack group and have the opportunity to meet some of our amazing guests. You can download Venturi's Voice via iTunes or via the Venturi Group website at venturi-group.com. Today's guest is Fawzi Mesmer, the Studio Games Design Director at King. It's great to have you on. Like I was saying, I love talking with people from kind of the gaming background, like, because I did work with people from that industry for a while, and it's such a great group of people that I was kind of lucky enough to work with. And you know, you've obviously kind of always been involved in that space, and you know, you were mentioning just before we started the recording there, you know, about how cool it is to be kind of part of something where it seems as though it's quite unanimous that people are just genuinely interested in the work they're doing, and you know, I think from that, passionate about it.
Yeah, it's really amazing, like, how once you step in the foot of any gaming studio, you instantly have something in common with every single person there. Everybody here, because they love games, right? They grew up playing games. They love the effect that games had on their lives, and they just love making games. And that's really refreshing, right? Like, you go into any space and you already have something in common with everybody there.
Yeah.
Really cool. Oh, yeah.
How do most people kind of get started then, you know, getting involved in games, you know, people who you work with? Like you say, people are interested in it. You know, I liked games growing up too, but I never had the bug to try and actually make them. So what was the, is there becoming kind of a more of a linear path now for people to get into game design?
I feel like every person in the games industry, like, they have their own breaking into the industry kind of story, which almost always interesting and kind of unique to them. So, like, the tricky part about, like, some of the most sought after jobs in the gaming industry would require some kind of experience, right? So, like, you need somebody to have made games before to hire into a game studio, which make breaking into the industry usually pretty tough, right? So you'd hear about people like going into the industry through testing and QA, then transitioning to game design, which is my function.
Right.
Or people just, you know, study computer science and then go in there as engineers, which is probably the easiest way to break into the games industry. And people just start and make games, and then either their games go big and then they become part of the industry automatically, or their games that might not have worked so much, or demos or mods or any or portfolios, anything that really can demonstrate their ability and passion to make games will be their gateway into the industry itself. And nowadays, which is something fantastic that we didn't have starting in the industry 15 years ago or something like that, is that there's schools that specialize in game development. So you can now go to school and study game design, game development, game art, and specialize in one of those fields as well. So not only study game development in general, you can also specialize and graduate as a game designer. And almost every company in the world has strong ties with the local game development schools, and they have strong internship programs. So you graduate from school, you can apply to your local game dev studio, start up your own with your mates, hook you up with internship, that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
there are many aspects which you can tackle this beast, I guess, and everybody has their own interesting story that ties along with it.
Maybe that, I mean, that probably makes it cool as well. You know, interestingly enough, I had like someone on the show earlier today from like diversity and inclusion. And obviously, like, the interesting thing about that is just, you know, in practical terms for me, it's just being surrounded with people who have completely different perspectives, you know, and different viewpoints on things, you know, and the gaming industry seems it's kind of just organically that way. But also, like, I also think, like, data is a little bit like that too. So, but those two specifically stick out to me as, like, fascinating places to work, because, like, there isn't this kind of systematic way yet of getting into it. There's not, like, a linear way, you know, like being a doctor or something. There's, like, a very specific path that you have to take in order to become a doctor, right? Whereas in, like, gaming, you don't have that. And it's fascinating that, like, those two industries are two of the kind of being two of the most prolific and kind of fast-growing industries in, like, the last 10 years, you know, data what's happening there has been just fascinating, how much it's exploded and what the demand for that need, that talent is in just across organizations is now. In gaming, obviously, you know, the level that that's exploded to over the last kind of 10 to 15 years is also on a phenomenal trajectory. So I just wonder at times whether, you know, people's, you know, introduction into those industries and the way that teams are collaborating because of, you know, probably the diversity of thought that's involved in those teams has been kind of a big part of kind of accelerating the growth.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that, actually, come to think about. My entire career, I've always worked in multicultural environments. Like, I'm originally from Jordan myself, right? Living in Germany, I'm working in a studio with over 30 different nationalities, right? So,
right, wow.
The gaming industry has always been this multicultural melting pot of talent. I think the aspects of it is that, you know, as you mentioned, that it's the unconventional way of breaking in, and also the unconventional way of the gaming industry, how it evolved in general. And there's also the aspect of, like, you'd want people with this ideals, right? Like, people that are super passionate about this thing, they really know their stuff, and they want to come together and make video games, and companies tend to bring those people wherever they find them because they're not easy to find. Myself, but almost a lot of people I know from the gaming industry, they've moved a lot, right? Like, I think I've moved 5 different countries so far and across the companies I've worked in, different continents even. And it's about, like, every time it's like working in this multicultural environment, in this new kind of environment around us. And it's been, I think it's really important to the end product at the end of it. This diversity shows in how the games that are being produced are so ubiquitous, accepted worldwide, and they're just inclusive, right? Like, most games are successes everywhere. And probably the diversity that makes them is behind that to some extent.
I really believe so. I think that there's, I think it's irresistible, isn't it? You know, to just have that kind of diversity of thought, it has to bring, you know, a better product out there. It just has to. I mean, you know, I'd love to see if someone can put something together on that, but, you know, whether looking at the industries that have been so, have seen rapid growth, and see if there is like a numbers to connect that to. But I'd be convinced that there would be, you know. And I think just for you as well, like as you were mentioning, you know, it leads, it's probably an enjoyable environment and an interesting environment to be in. And I think when people are compelled by what they do, I think people perform best when they're actually interested in what they're doing. I think that's just a given, right?
Yeah, I agree completely.
You know, your background, I was kind of reading a little bit, you know, obviously you do kind of a lot of speaking now, you you know, obviously played, you know, a lot of the games and stuff yourself. Did you like compete, right, in like esports and stuff?
I used to back in the day, yeah. It's been a while.
Right.
Now, I still follow esports, but yeah, it's been a while since I used to compete in some games myself, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just fascinating as well, like how much that's kind of exploded. But, you know, what do you kind of find yourself speaking about typically now? You know, what, when you're doing these kind of public speaking engagements, and, you know, obviously you've had kind of a fascinating career, but what is it specifically now that you find you're getting kind of asked about asked to speak on the most?
Yeah, it depends on the avenue in which I speak of. So, like, I do a lot of talks and presentations at local game development schools. And that'll be more catered towards students, basically talking about theoretical and applied game design. So it's, you know, sharing my knowledge and experience with those guys. And, yeah, hopefully giving them something to look forward to when they graduate. And global conferences, especially when it comes to video game development, I mostly do presentations either about my current employer, King. It's a company I love working for and has had tremendous success around the world. I do talk a little bit about my experience in game design and management in different aspects of the world. So the cultural differences is something I'm kind of interested in. And one of the presentations I do is about different management styles in the Middle East, Japan, and the West, and how those different techniques and styles come to, because having had the experience of being a manager in all of these areas, manager of game design teams specifically, I found a lot of really interesting thoughts and techniques around that. a lot of talks are just promoting game design in general, applied game design, the future of the industry and where it's headed, panels on monetization of free-to-play business models in game design and game development. Yeah. Yeah, so those are the general topics
yeah.
I mostly address. Yeah.
And what's your kind of been your trajectory as well, you know, going through kind of starting off as a designer to, you know, where being a director, you know, you talk about, you know, game like monetization and obviously having to pay, I suppose, closer attention to, you know, the bottom line of things, essentially. Was that kind of a particular point of infliction in your career that you really had to learn quite a lot about coming from being like an esports player into a designer and then into a director role where obviously you have to be so aware about things like monetization? Was that something that kind of happened quite kind of organically, or was that something that was quite a big kind of learning curve for you?
First of all, just a little correction. Like, I've always been a game designer. So the esports stuff, I did it on my own personal time while I was working in game development. So 15 years, I've always been in game design.
Right.
And even now as a game design director, I'm still very much involved with the game design and the creative output of the company. So the design aspect of games and video games in general, but all acts of play really is something that is of great interest to me. When it comes to monetization design, it's I think monetization goes into everything, any kind of artistic or like business or any kind of product that you want to put out there. Back in the 80s, when we put the arcade machines together, people were like, all right, so we have this cool thing. People clearly like it. We'll put it in places where people gather around. How do we make money of it? And then, you know, the arcades came out and you put quarters into them and stuff like that. And the games industry as a business kept on evolving since then.
Mm.
Different business models just kept on changing with time. Because obviously there are people that want to do this as a living, and those people need to live as well. So, and growing this industry as a business is vital for its creation. The thing that makes it a little bit interesting is that whereas in software, people can opt in to buy it or not based on how much they need it, we are an entertainment business at the end of the day. So people don't need entertainment to survive. However, especially with the options being out there, however, people value the quality of the entertainment, and based on how they value their entertainment is how much they're willing to spend on it. So really, the value of the experience is something that goes hand in hand with the design experience. So as you're designing the game or the product in general, you want to make sure that it's carrying the value that you would expect the users to be interested in. And that's where the interest in monetization would come in, especially now recently when most of the games I've been working on are most on the free-to-play model. So if you're presenting a game for free for billions of users, how would you provide a valuable experience so that those users are interested in monetizing or paying?
Interesting. It's super fascinating, isn't it? It's relatively so new, the focus kind of on monetization, you know, giving things kind of, I suppose we give so much up front, you know, in some instances, especially in like app stores and things like that, you know, there's so much kind of that you're having to give away. So it's, I feel like it's changed models across industries just in general of like the way that people consume like content and the way that people just consume products in general. I think it's gone into like a lot of other industries, like even outside just kind of gaming and apps and such. Has that kind of been your perspective as well on things?
Yeah, I've definitely had a close eye on other entertainment industries as well as ours, right? And it's natural because as technology evolves, so as how we consume or use that technology, how we use that, the method that we interact with it will evolve as well.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the music industry, for example, the growth and the change that music industry had over the past 15 years is just instrumental, right? Like, it's monumental if you think about it. Music went from cassettes to CDs to MP3s to streaming within those 15 years.
crazy.
The concept of how music artists publish their records or tour or get their music across changed drastically. You know, like, now everybody has the ability to publish their music online to millions of users. It's obviously surfacing that is a lot more difficult than it used to be, but it's not the industry that's controlled by record labels in the same way that it used to be, right?
You know, the one thing as well with a fast-moving industry is the kind of the skills gap that you can tend to get. You know, we talked about, you know, the people, the kind of the makeup of a company like King, right? And how compelling it is, and because of their backgrounds and such. But what's the kind of the skills gap like now? Because clearly an industry that moves so quickly, it's inevitable that you're going to have kind of a shortage of talent to be able to fill those kind of roles. So is it something that, you know, from your perspective, you're still experiencing?
As I mentioned earlier in the podcast when we started talking about it, when it comes to talent, especially in the gaming industry, most of the time we're looking for very highly specialized talent. So we're not looking for just any game developer at this point sometimes within the industry. Sometimes you're looking for somebody that worked on specific game genres because that's the kind of genre that your company is now specializing in. So you could be, so if you're making a racing game, for example, you'd need a game designer, but it would be better if you had a game designer that's made racing games before. You know what I mean? So it becomes even a specialized subsector within a very specialized industry to begin with. So if you're even making a racing game that's on mobile, then you probably want a game designer who had also made racing games before, on mobile preferably. You know what I mean? Because it will, having a person with that kind of experience will give you a big shortcut in terms of amount of learnings and mistakes given. Finding somebody with this expertise level can be proven difficult, which is why most of the time in gaming companies and studios, you'd find a whole lot of experts from different corners of the earth. So we end up recruiting people with the right amount of skill set that we need for our needs, wherever we can find them. That causes even more diversity, which is, you know, the flip side of this that I kind of enjoy as well.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. And you know, obviously it's always a fascinating thing for us as, you know, who are involved in the staffing world, you know, to hear about these kind of trends. But do you think that that's only going to increase? What's kind of the outlook for you? And is it something that you consider, you know, is the forecast on, you know, how to kind of innovate to ensure that you do have a pipeline of talent for an industry that's inevitably going to continue to, you know, evolve quickly. Is that something that, like, now in your position, you have to, like, consider and forecast is, you know, what is coming next, you know, and how do we prepare across the floor to ensure that we can service that?
Definitely, because building games takes time, right? Depending on, like, the scale of the game, it could take years.
Yeah.
And You need to realize as you're building the game right now that this game, if you're building the game in 2018, you're really building the game to be released when it's done, right? So like you're building the game for the 2020 market or the 2021 market or something like that. Different like if in AAA, for example, games can take up to 5 years. So, and up until then, you're working with hundreds of people to get this product finalized to reach to the market that you hopefully forecasted correctly so that the game will also still appeal to people in then. And this is a very tech-driven industry, right? So, like, the tech advances and we have to follow. And I think we made so many strides in the industry that makes it really interesting and makes forecasting really part of the job. I think many of the people around me in the industry of different functions, we seem to always be thinking about what's next, right? Mm. So like we don't get to catch our breath and enjoy the moment. We're like, all right, cool, we got the game released. It's doing all right. Now let's think what's going to happen in the industry in the next 3 years. Are we ready for it? Do we have the capabilities for this? Do we have the tech? If we don't, how can we develop the tech so that we're ready for that game release in 3 years? We're always playing forecast. Yeah. I like that, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think you have to, right? And you have to, even within the talent now, you have to be bringing people on board that are motivated by looking forward and motivated by learning new skills. You know, I can only imagine, like, you know, how many kind of new skills and how many, like, different technologies you've had to learn over your career.
Oh, yeah. So many.
Right. So it's like almost like a prerequisite that you are kind of forward thinking and innovative, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't think there's a way around it. The industry changes so often, man. Like at some point in time, we used to release game on cartridges. A couple of years later, it's CDs. All right, so we started getting comfortable with CDs. Next thing we know, now it's DVDs. We have triple the space to make games. Like, all right, let's double the teams and work with that.
Right.
Next thing we know, 6 years later, it's HD now, and we're working with Blu-ray. More space, more specs, bigger teams. And we have to deal with that, right? Smartphones come over, changes everything. We need to deal with that too.
It's been, well, I suppose it keeps it interesting at least.
Oh, yeah. You never get bored, that's for sure.
You know, for you as well, you know, in your kind of personal development now, being so senior, do your kind of priorities change as far as where you want to get to in your career? Because I suppose you get close to the top, you know, you get to the level that you're up to as a director. Do your kind of priorities change about like what you want to achieve personally? How have you approached goal setting just in general?
I think there's a bunch of ways we can approach this. So like I have personal goals for myself. One of them almost never changes. It was just like, I just want to make cool games that I enjoy by as many people as possible. And I feel like the more I move in my career, or the more I work with more talented people, or like the more companies I work with, the more I have opportunities to do that. But the goal is always the same. I just want to make cool games that will reach out millions of people and hopefully will inspire them in the same way that they inspired me when I was a kid to start making games as well. The second part of my personal goal setting is that I always have the drive to give back.
Yeah.
Give back to the community, give back to the people, the young people that want to make games, give back to the students, try to, you know, approach students as much as possible and, you know, give them advice whenever possible. Try to make knowledge around game design more approachable to a lot of people. So when I even like started in my home country of Jordan, that the community was fairly small. There was just 10 of us making games at the time.
Right.
And now the industry is growing, and it's becoming to be formed in a full-fledged industry. And just recently, I finished writing the first book ever about game design in Arabic, so that it will help bridge the gap for people in Jordan to, you know, be able to learn game design without having the need to learn a foreign language. You know what I mean? So like, people can actually get to motivate their skills and get better at this craft, this world that I really enjoy. I want more people to be able to access it without having the need to learn a foreign language or something like this. So giving back to the community is something that's very important to me. Releasing cool games that millions of people can enjoy or more is super important to me as well.
Right, it's really impressive. And I think, like say, it's, I think a lot of people are probably going to listen to this podcast and be quite envious of you. Because, you know, there's not many people that I guess have the career that you've had and it be something that they felt as passionately about as you. You know, that it's very rare. You know, typically we think about, you know, athletes and things like that are the kind of people who've been lucky enough to enjoy, you know, what they do and actually, you know, get paid for it, right? I mean, it's, you know, this is almost like a new generation of people like yourself that you know, being allotted that privilege, I suppose.
I've always felt fortunate, and I've always felt like super lucky that for some reason when I was a kid, I've always had this compass to go like, I just want to make games. You know what I mean? Like, I think that even when I was in the first grade or something, my mom still keeps that paper when they like rolled it around school, and they asked the kids around what they wanted to do when they grew up, and people had like, you know, astronauts, cowboys, or whatever, and I wrote game designer, and I'm pretty sure at the time I had no idea what that meant.
Right.
But I've always, like, I feel fortunate that I always had this compass whenever, like, whatever opportunity presented itself to me, I go, like, does this help me make games? And if the answer is no, then I'm not interested. If it's yes, then yes, I'm pursuing it. You know what I mean? Imagine having this kind of compass that will help you make these decisions. I feel very, very lucky to have had that from a young age.
I think you are. And I think it's awesome, though, that you've actually managed to pursue it. So it shows that it's a great lesson for a lot of people as well, I think, you know, that you can pursue these things. You know, if you know, I think, like you say, there's an element of kind of being lucky in the sense that, you know, you have that interest and you kind of pursue it. But there's also a lot of people who have that interest and then don't pursue it for whatever reason. So it's a good lesson to learn for those people who, you know, to pursue what you're passionate about and, you know, you can be... You know, you can have such a tremendous career at things.
I'm humbled. I think that I'm saying that somebody can take something out of it, something that's really humbling for me.
Yeah, I certainly think they can. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, actually. Unfortunately, we're restricted by time that I have to kind of shut things down now, but I think that it'd be fantastic to maybe do collaborate on something again, and hopefully have like a longer conversation that maybe off air or something at some point. I'll have to kind of buy you a drink next time I'm in Berlin.
Sounds amazing, man. Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. And
sorry, I want to keep.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.